The Spectator is searching for the UK's brightest entrepreneurs to enter the Spectator Economic Innovator of the Year Awards in partnership with Charles Stanley Wealth Managers. If you have a business that disrupts an existing market, a smart new way of doing things, or something that has incredible social impact, then apply by 1st of July at spectator.co.uk/innovator.
Hello and welcome to Table Talk, the Spectator's food and drink podcast. I'm Lara Prendergast.
And I'm Olivia Potts.
And we're delighted today to be joined by Callum Franklin. Callum is executive head chef at Holborn Dining Room and a pastry expert who has become renowned internationally for his pies, so much so that Jamie Oliver refers to him as the Pie King. His new book, The Pie Room, is a treasure trove of recipes for some of his favourite ever pastry dishes. Callum, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to talk to you guys.
Well, we're going to start where we always start. At the beginning, we would love to know your first memory of food.
I mean, for me, it's sitting with my brothers as a child and, yeah, kind of, you know, sitting down around the family table with my mum and my brothers. And if I eat something that reminds me of that and gives me that sort of, you know, comfort of a simpler time, I try and put it on the menu at work.
What kind of things? What brings comfort and memories back?
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, in terms of pies, like a fish pie 100% reminds me of sort of sitting with my mum and brothers as a kid. My dad worked away a lot, so with him around, it was often like fish and chip Friday night, something like that. But I think food having that ability to sort of transport you away somewhere is something that I really enjoy playing on in the restaurant, because it's quite often subliminal. Right, so we all lead busy lives nowadays, and if I can get someone who's been working on multi-million pound deals all day in their office to sort of subliminally slip back into a bit of childhood memory, I've done my job and I'm happy, right?
And where did your interest in cooking come from? Did your mother used to cook a lot?
Yeah, I mean, she used to cook kind of like simple, homely food for us. I had two brothers and I think we were all nightmares. So, you know, she would cook like what she could to the best of her ability. And she cooked really lovely, like simple food. But in terms of what got me into cooking professionally, that was more that I think I took a job as a kitchen porter. I was at school and I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life. I wasn't sort of very much an academic in terms of I hated exams. I hated sitting at a desk. I was very fidgety. And my brothers were both very academic and had sort of, you know, had their eyes set on a career already. And I was a bit lost at sea. And I took a job as a kitchen porter to earn some money when I was young, still at school. And actually the sort of environment of the kitchen, on the first day I was at work, I was like, I can see myself doing this for a living. And I mean, I don't mean sort of being up to my elbows in the dishwasher area, but that sort of frenetic creative energy that's in a kitchen really appealed to me. And I remember sort of going back to my brothers and saying, like, laughing at them, like, haha, I found what I wanted to do. And then from there, what really sealed it was, I mean, the actual ability to make people happy through something that you do. People don't do that in every job, right? But I get to, you know, attempt to do that, and hopefully I'm successful with it a lot of the time. But I get to do that every day. I'm just, you know, I get paid to try and make people happy. So that's a pretty cool job to have. Yeah, and yeah, cooking is that sort of creative outlet for me.
And when you first started in cooking as a teenager, still at school, as you say, Were you an adventurous eater? Were you cooking at home at all? Or was it really just completely brand new?
Yeah, I used to cook awful things. I was when you're really young as a chef, you want to constantly show off, right? So anything that you learn, you want to sort of show that you've learned it. And you try and put 50 techniques on a plate. So I'd go home and cook these bonkers things for my family. Restraint is something that you sort of learn later down the line. And yeah, my mum will remind me of that all the time. I think I was like hooked from the very beginning and knew that it was something that I was sort of in for life very early on.
And you've worked in various restaurants, including the Ivy and the Inigo at One Aldwych. I mean, how do you think things have changed in the restaurant industry since you've been working in it?
Things became much more about the guest, like for the absolute good. I mean, when I first started cooking in London, it was very much all about the chef. It was, there was never salt and pepper on the table. You couldn't ask to change anything. You could never, say, would you be able to provide a different vegetarian option, for example? The chef would throw you out of the restaurant. Thank God that sort of thing has changed. And in terms of like a working environment as well, it's changed massively. It's much more sort of, a lovelier environment to work in. But also, if you look at London's restaurant scene, it's just exploded. From where I was, my entry sort of 20 years ago into London restaurants, there was really like a handful of great restaurants in the city. And now it's actually sort of difficult to, if you try, just think about where you want to go out to eat in the evening, you have to narrow it down to either an area or, very specific cuisine in order to sort of get that thought process going. Because otherwise it's just trying to grab something out of air. But I'm very proud of the sort of London restaurant scene as it is at the moment.
And tell us about your first job as a chef in a restaurant. So you started as a kitchen porter, but you then went to Chapter One, is that right?
Yeah, Chapter One was like an amazing, amazing place to learn. When I joined, it had just, I think it was the first week I was there, it just won a Michelin star. And it had been voted best restaurant in the UK. And I was sort of very green going into that kitchen, and I didn't know a lot of the things in terms of discipline that you are supposed to know as a chef. And it was a good place to learn those lessons very quickly and to never make the mistakes again. But everyone I know that worked there sort of looks back at those times and appreciates the work ethic that that restaurant gave us, which was, you worked sort of 17, 18 hours a day at full speed, and there was no room for error. And the sort of classical training that it gave us as well, the food was very much rooted in sort of French classical cookery. And I still use those techniques today because I still believe in them, and I think that they produce very tasty food. But it was a tough place to work, I won't lie. But yeah, I still think of it very fondly at the same time.
And you eventually became head chef at the Holborn Dining Room, where you've become renowned for your pies. Can you tell us about how you sort of first discovered this love of pies and pastry?
Yeah, over the years, I've always enjoyed, in all the cuisines I've worked in, this like savoury pastry element, which does pop up in different cuisines. It's really sort of prominent in French cooking. So when I worked in fine dining, quite often we would do sort of quite elaborate petits viers and things like that. And then when we opened Holborn Dining Room, we had a pie on the menu and it was really popular. And I realised, actually, our sort of guest base at the restaurant appreciated that sort of classic British cooking in terms of pies and savoury pastries. So over a period of like a year, I just tested the water with it, see sort of if I could pop another thing on. And then we popped a Wellington on, and it always went down very well. And then one day we were in the basement of the hotel. Now this building's like 110 years old, I think. I need to double check that, but it's been various things over the years. And there's this huge store in the basement. And quite often we would find things in there like, silver serviceware that was beautiful, like old antique trolleys and things like that. And we'd incorporate them into the restaurant. We'd restore them and incorporate them. And one day I found this pie tin. It was this kind of elaborate pie tin with interlocking parts. And I thought, I knew what it was, but I didn't know how to use it. And that's always been a big sort of mental problem for me. I don't like having gaps in my knowledge in cooking. I mean, and there are vast gaps, right? I don't know, you know, by any means about, you know, solid base of all cuisines. But if I identify a gap in my knowledge, I always try and sort of close that down. So I went up to the kitchen and said to the chefs, has anyone used one of these before? Like, has anyone learnt the technique to line a pie in one of these locking moulds? And I've got 35 chefs in the kitchen and none of them knew it. And it was like a shock to me. I thought, you know, we're all very good at these sort of modern techniques. And I can tell you how to cook a piece of fennel in a sous vide bag for 78 hours. But actually this like very old traditional technique, which teaches you multiple skills when you work with it. None of us knew it, right? So I was like, oh, wow, this is not just a gap in my knowledge. It's in these young chefs. And if we don't address this, then, you know, potentially that's 35 chefs of a generation who are going to just completely miss out and we'll never be able to pass that on to someone. So I kind of set on this little journey to sort of look back at these old techniques and to sort of resurrect them in our kitchen. And to train people how to pass that knowledge on in the future.
As you say, Callum, pies are obviously a great British tradition. Why do you think they've sort of fallen out of fashion? Obviously, you've now revived them, but why do you think they had fallen out of fashion?
Well, I mean, it's like a historical trend, right? So you can kind of look back at 600 years of written history of pies, and the one thing is that they are a constant. Okay, in this country, they are always there in our food culture, but there are periods of time where they're served at royal banquets, and there's periods of times where they sort of go back to the peasant table. And I think, you know, we just sort of reached a point here where, you know, if you look back at the sort of last 40 years where sort of the commercial production of food took over and pies really became sort of less handmade, more manufactured, and the image of them just lessened. And I just saw an opportunity to sort of try and resurrect them a little bit. And also, I mean, you know, there's that, like, because there's that 600 years of written history, in my lifetime, I will never sort of, you know, master the art of pies. I don't think so. And that's really exciting to me. I think there's so much sort of scope into going into them. It keeps me sort of busy all the time.
Your pies are beautiful, and listeners should definitely have a look at your Instagram page because there are all kinds of incredible things to look at there. How long does it tend to take you to make one of those pies?
Well, I mean, depending on what it is. So the last couple of days, I've made some fairly elaborate ones. I've made about, you know, sort of 20 elaborate pies in the last 2 days. But, you know, a single pie can take me up to sort of 2-3 days if it's something really, you know, extreme. The reason why is because the outside can look as, you know, as complex and beautiful as I want. But the inside as well, like I've learned techniques and we're sort of still learning techniques to make that, you know, really incredible as well. So you get that incredible moment of cutting through and there's a surprise inside as well. And we've done some over the years, which have been sort of fairly bonkers. We did one pie for a dinner with Tom Kerridge that had a clock face that ran through the centre of it, made out of sausage, using this sort of old French technique. And when you slice the pie, the time changed on the clock. So like that technique took me probably 2 months to sort of work out. And then, you know, building it probably took 2-3 days. But then you have that time frame as well. It can't really take longer than that because it's a perishable product as well.
What is it about savoury pies rather than patisserie that sort of captured your imagination? You talk about in the book about French pastry techniques being something you'd been aware of from your early days of training. But obviously that often feeds into the patisserie side of the kitchen, and that's not really where you found yourself with the pie room.
No, I mean, like, I have no formal pastry training at all, right? Nothing. I've worked on sort of pastry sections a little bit throughout my career, but savoury pastry appeals to me because it's a mix of different techniques. So, you know, you've got the sort of work of a charcutier making sure the filling is perfect, the butchery side of things, understanding the cooking of savoury products as well. But then on top of all of that, you've got that fine pastry work that goes around the outside. So for me, it was the sort of the full package in terms of challenge. Also, I mean, look, in terms of going into technique and discovering new techniques and working on our own, if you look at sweet pastry, I mean, you know, there are masters all over the world, right? So if this sort of cheeky upstart from London turned up and said, hey, look, I don't believe in any of your techniques, I'm going to start doing my own, I'd probably get shot down for it. So actually, like savoury pastry, I think we can sort of lead the way a little bit in that and look at new techniques and new pastry doughs and new fillings. And yeah, so that's exciting for me.
And what are your most popular fillings in the pie room?
Funnily, for the restaurant and for the retail, the most popular pie we sell is a chicken, mushroom and tarragon pie. I think it's just because, you know, chicken and mushroom is something that's sort of embedded in us from a childhood, chicken and mushroom pie. Everybody really knows it in the UK. But my favourite one in the restaurant and in the retail is our cheese, potato and onion pie, because it's, again, that's based on something that we all sort of know. But for me, it stands up with all of the meat pies and fish pies that we do. It's something that we worked on very hard. It's really sort of Moorish and decadent. It's dauphinoise potato layered with aged Comté cheese, caramelised onion. And the pastry work that we do on it is the hardest thing that we do in the restaurant. And that's in the cookbook, actually. There's a sort of large family-sized version of that where we've made it sort of accessible to anyone to make. But yeah, I mean, all of the pies sort of do well against each other in the restaurant. It's always like seeing which ones, you know, when we do our sales mixes at the end of the month, it's quite exciting to see which ones sold the most. But it's generally the chicken and mushroom.
Tell us about the process of designing the pie room, because you designed it, right?
Yeah, so just to sort of go right back to the start, the reason why it's been successful as it is because it was born out of necessity. Right. So the more savoury pastry we were doing at the restaurant, the more strain it was putting on our main kitchen. So, all you know, it was in a hot, busy kitchen. We were trying to do all this fine pastry work. So I said to the senior team one day, look, we either sort of cap it where we're at and keep it at this level for quality purposes, or we find another space to do this completely separately with a separate team. And that was where the pie room came from. So we had this space next to the restaurant that was a deli. And I sort of approached the owners of the building and said, how do you feel about me putting a pie room in your, you know, incredible 110-year-old building? And I sold it to them a little better than that. But, you know, I drew the room. So I sat on one side of the room, drew the wall, sat on the other side of the room, drew the opposite wall. In the most ridiculous way, but I like design and drawing. So I took my time and made it look beautiful and sold it to them on the basis that it, you know, the room would capture a part of British food history. And then in terms of the detail of the room, I wanted an environment that reflected the detail that would go into the food. So the chefs that work in there are surrounded by attention to detail, because I knew that it would influence what they do. I mean, if you look at it when you walk past on the street, the first thing you see is all of this sort of beautiful copper and brass reflecting back at you through the glass wall. And that was based on, if you go to Paris and you see these, there's like three or four antique kitchen shops in Paris, and they always have brass and copper in the window. And when the sun's shining, it reflects off of those and it just catches your eye. So I really wanted to have that in the pie room, and it works, right? So I see people cross the road all the time. They just kind of see something that's like glittering in the window and wander over. So I've already kind of half got them. And then you get hit with the smell of pies coming through the hatch windows. And then, you know, hopefully at that point I've sort of already made a sale. And then we've just sort of added, and it's lovely, it's quite an organic sort of design because we've added little bits to it over time. And that's quite often from, if I'm cooking somewhere abroad, so if we're invited to cook in a restaurant in like Europe or in America or somewhere like that, we'll always try and look for something whilst we're there as a sort of memento. And it sounds really tacky, like I'm not talking about a fridge magnet, but we'll go to antique stores whilst we're there and look for something that might fit into the pie room, because then it becomes part of the history of the room. So there are all these little details in there. There's this beautiful brass bell that we have on the hatch, like a service bell, and that was from Stockholm. And that reminds me and the team there of, you know, a dinner that we did at a restaurant in Stockholm, like a collaboration dinner. So it becomes all personal to us.
So this is more of a new question for this podcast, but since, you know, obviously we've had lockdown and the pie room's now been open for the last few months as well, but how have you found cooking in lockdown? Have you found that people have sort of wanted the comfort food of a pie?
Yeah, absolutely, right. And the other thing I found is that people have the luxury of more time to invest in cooking as well at home. So people are trying, you know, slightly more crafted things. So for me, it's been, you know, I mean, obviously it's been a terrible, terrible time in terms of the disease, but in terms of what it's done for home cooking for the nation, I think is going to improve that on a large scale. The other thing with pies is, you know, like, people are buying nicer ingredients to put into them as well. People are investing more of their money into food nowadays, which has been lovely to see as well.
And do people share their creations with you on social media?
It's really nice. Every day people sort of tag me in photos or send me, you know, pictures of what they've made. Sometimes people write very rude things on top, not directed at me, but lots of pies with a sort of a very cheeky sense of humour on top that I can't necessarily always repost on social media. But I like that people are having fun with pies again. It's really, you know, that's super cool for me.
You have obviously been tapping into a sort of public consciousness of comfort food. But for you, when you're not in the restaurant, when you're at home, what is comfort food to you?
The one thing I can always, like, when I taste it, just absolutely makes me calm and happy is a really classic British beef stew. Yeah. Done properly, it's an absolute thing of beauty. And I think it's something that we take for granted in this country. I think I made one again the other day and I just took that first sip of like the sauce on a spoon when I was making it, and it just made me feel so good and so happy. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's lots of things that are kind of fairly rubbish about this country in terms of weather and stuff like that. I think that's where that food came from. It's that sort of warm blanket that kind of wraps around you when you're eating it. A classic British stew sort of always takes me back there.
Callum, we normally finish by asking our guests what they would choose if they were cast away, for want of a better word, to a desert island and had to just pick a meal. What would be your last meal?
It's so difficult, that question, because my mum makes a roast lamb, which is just, I could eat four whole plates of it. And having that and having the company of my family, I don't think I can have a better meal than that. So, yeah, mum's roast lamb every day of the week.
Callum, thank you so much for joining us on Table Talk. It's been wonderful to have you on. And Callum's book, The Pie Room, by Callum Franklin, is published by Bloomsbury and available now. Thank you for joining us on The Spectator's Food and Drink podcast. For more recipes, food history, stories and drinks, you can head to the Spectator website.